We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on the Lawrence Holmes Show.
We still have to wait, though, because the arbitrator hasn't given us a ruling yet.
You think this man or woman are just sitting at the house, chilling, it's like, oh, man. Oh, yeah, I forgot. I got to do that thing.
Because wasn't that grievance filed 5 years ago?
Yes. And just finally heard in October or November.
It's like sitting under some pizza box in like the corner of an office.
Like someone stepped on it.
Yes.
like, what's this? This looks important. Oh, it's the Chris Bryant ruling. Throw that in the recycling. It's not great at all.
Make me a bicycle clown.
Well, now it's over. According to reports from USA Today, Yahoo, and ESPN, and the Chicago Sun-Times, and everywhere else, there has been a ruling on Chris Bryant and his status as a free agent. He will not be a free agent until after the 2021 season. Therefore, therefore, he has more value as a trade commodity now than he did if he was only going to have 1 year of free agency time or service time to play out before he became a free agent. I am Lawrence. So who's that lose for? Like, what are we playing the prices right for? Is that for Chris Bryant or is that for the Cubs? Because now they're probably going to trade Chris Bryant.
I think it's for everybody involved. Firstly, how long this took. The Cubs really theoretically can't trade him now, right now, like in the offseason. Games are starting in 2 months.
So what?
But you got to have to get up a trade deal in 2 months? I know they've probably been working on something with teams, but I think everybody loses. This, I said it on Twitter, like this decision a couple years ago to have him sit out for 2 weeks to get that extra year, what did you gain? What did you gain? A failed relationship with the player? 5 years of his great service? And I know people are going to say, a championship. You could have got that championship without the service time manipulation.
I don't know if people are looking at it that way, Herbie. I'm with you. Like, I feel like Chris Bryant is the type of player that should be rewarded. The whole concept of loyalty, especially if you look at it from the front side. I don't think that their relationship is damaged beyond repair. And Gordon Whittemeyer is going to join us at 12:40. By the way, I'm Lawrence. You'll hear Herbie. You'll hear Campy on the show. We got rid of the rundown since the Bryant story is fairly fresh over the last couple of hours. And maybe you're just finding out as you're getting ready to go to lunch of what's going on. But the arbitrator or the arbiter, is it arbitrator or arbiter? The arbiter sided with baseball and with the Cubs, that he still has 2 years of control under the Cubs before he becomes a free agent. So theoretically, he now becomes an easier person to trade because there's more value in having a player like Chris Bryant for 2 years versus having a player for 1 year. So it might mean that the Cubs can get their farm system at least partially stocked back up because they can trade Bryant for prospects. Then we have to have the discussion of, is that really what you want to do? But considering the luxury tax implications of the Cubs having Chris Bryant on their roster for the next 2 years, from a business standpoint, I understand why the Cubs would be interested in doing that. From a baseball standpoint, and from the standpoint of what the Cubs have talked about since Theo and Jed got here, is that you were supposed to have these dynamic young players. And the dynamic young players were supposed to grow up together. And when they grew up together, you were going to be able to pay them. It strikes me as that this is the type of player that you would want to pay long term to be with your franchise for a long time. And I know that there are people who disagree with me, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with my stance that I think that Chris Bryant's a great player. And it's going to be hard for you to convince me that he's not. But I understand that there are people who think, well, maybe he hasn't completely maximized who he is as a player yet. But it's really going to suck if you see that maximizing happening somewhere else, in my opinion. Like, that's the thing that I don't think that they should be in a hurry. I think that the deal has to be knock me out good if you're going to part with him. If you're parting with him just to give yourself some relief so that you're not in the tax, you're not in a repeater in the tax, again, I understand it, but don't let that force your hand and then push you into a bad deal because you're worried about that. That's where my concern comes in. You know, that's what makes sense to me, at least. And I know that this opens things up. I feel like the Cubs have been stalled. That they've been stalled because they don't know. And when you don't know, it's hard to do. Like, it's really, really hard to do.
This whole offseason was because of Chris Bryant. They can't move until they know, right?
Yeah, they couldn't make any of these moves because you don't want to short yourselves. You don't want to make a trade not knowing. And the other side is like, well, we can't give you maximum value. Because if we give you maximum value and he's only going to play for us for 1 year, that stinks. And maybe it's one of those things where Chris Bryant plays for the Cubs for half the year. And then when you get to the trade deadline, his value, that's what I'm still trying to figure out. Is his value maximized now that everyone knows that it's 2 years versus one? Or can the Cubs get more bang for their buck to wait until the trade deadline and maybe they do have multiple suitors that are more desperate then? But there are teams right now that I imagine are desperate to have a starting third baseman. Atlanta's one of them.
Washington's
another one.
I mean, if they ship over a high prospect, you got to think about it. But like you said, you can't trade Chris Bryant for pennies on the dollar just because.
Right. That's my concern. And I don't think it's not that there's really even a history of Theo and Jed acting that way. There's no history of them panicking. Like, the way that the Cubs baseball operation has gone over the last 7 years, they've never struck me as being a panicked group. They measure things out. They're not always right, but it never seems like they're in a hurry. But I guess we'll find out, because the luxury tax thing is real. Like, we know that they have all the money in the world, but they don't want to pay the tax. So they are acting accordingly from that standpoint. And if you have problems with that as a consumer of Cubs baseball, I understand your pain. I totally understand your pain.
One of the points of him being a 7-year guy instead of 6-year guy is to have this window of competing open for a longer time, right? So
Yes. This
year, I have pretty much closed that window of being a championship contender because their team is not set. And the fact that they couldn't do anything this year, that's what I'm saying. Was all that stuff, that 2 weeks, worth all that? Now that you're in, after year 5 of Chris Bryant, you're not moving forward. You're stagnant. Maybe even moving backwards because the Reds are coming up for you. They beat you in the season series last year.
Brewers and St.
Louis are not going anywhere.
And yeah, you've got an extremely competitive division. And if you look at Contreras, Rizzo, Bryant, and Baez, you go, well, that's a great place to start if you're trying to compete. But if you don't have enough money to build around these guys and then you find yourself kind of having to cobble together a roster and go, okay, well, let's add Jeffress. Let's see if Souza can can provide a little bit of the promise that he showed as a younger player, it seems as if you're conceding the 2020 season. That's part of my issue with the Cubs, is that it feels like, yeah, our team is probably good enough to win 84 games. You didn't have any money to try and push that number up. So if you're not going to be if you're not going to be extremely competitive from a free agent standpoint, then maybe you do have to take a step back as a franchise. But it's some stuff. This texter says, well, of course he's not going to re-sign. He's a Boris client. Explain Steven Strasburg. I hate these old tropes about you got a little bit of information and you think that sums up the totality of someone's career. Scott Boras sent Steven Strasburg into free agency and he wound up right back where he was. Don't let the Cubs off the hook for that. Don't let, because they obviously knew who his agent was going to be. Don't let them off the hook and say that they can get a pass. They don't have to try and re-sign Chris Bryant because he's a Scott Boras client. That is crap.
And I think,
as far as I'm concerned,
the Strasburg situation is a way you can see where the relationship with the team and the player started off on a good note, where they held him back from going to the playoffs because they're taking care of his arm and his well-being. And he repaid them by signing a extension before this one, opting out, and then re-signing a higher extension. So, yeah, that relationship never was bad, never was soured. And we had Gord Whitmire on like 2 months ago saying that, yeah, Chris Bryant got mad that the way they treated him with the sitting down for 2 weeks. It might have been, you know, smoothed over since, but he was mad at that time.
Yeah, and I think that what it manifested into was advocacy. And Gordon can speak to it more intelligently than we can coming up at 12:40. But what they got was a guy that is now in the front of the leadership of the Players Association. And he can look to his own case and say, we should probably have a discussion about service time when the collective bargaining agreement comes back up. Chris Bryant is going to be front and center in that regard. It doesn't have to be he hates the Cubs and he hates Tom Ricketts and Theo Epstein. It can be degrees of, okay, I now understand that this is a business. Therefore, I am going to act as if it's a business when it comes to my own personal negotiation. That's all it has to be. It doesn't have to be animosity. From what I know of Chris Bryant, and I'm not as well connected as other people are, he doesn't seem, it's one of those things where I don't think that he's going to hold a grudge, but I also think that it has changed the way that he looks at all of this. It's given him perspective, and he's going to use that perspective to make good choices in the coming days. That's how I look at it. If you'd like to respond, you'd like to text us, 670-11 is the way that you could do that with some of your thoughts. We need to take a timeout. I am at the Super Bowl, so we might have a couple people stop by. I know Brad Evans is around here somewhere wanting to yell and about all sorts of things, and he's always fun. We're going to have Shannon Sharp on the show today. That's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk with Gordon Widenmeyer. There's a lot of stuff that we got to get done, but we are here for you over the next 2 hours. Lawrence Holmes here with you on The Score.
I think when the service time issue came up, that was a punch in the nose to him. More so even than not getting called up in September the year before when he deserved it. And he wasn't too happy about that either. But when he didn't make the team out of camp, when they promised him he would have a chance, and then came to discover, if he didn't already know it, that it was completely business, it changed, I guess, maybe some of his idealism, I guess, as far as playing the game in the track of his career.
That was Gordon Widenmeyer with me back in December, back when it was only going to be a week until the arbiter ruled. It ended up being another 6 weeks until the arbiter ruled on it. But the ruling has come in. Chris Bryant has 2 years left. Will have service time to the Cubs and or whomever the Cubs trade him to. We'll find out if they are now hot and heavy about trading him. Gordon Whitmire is going to join me at 12:40 to discuss. Before I get to my guest, who I adore, a texter said, this from 309, it's a really good text. Do you think the arbitrator decided to hold this out to affect the Cubs, believing Chris Bryant did get screwed, but knew the Cubs did everything right, that he couldn't rule against them? Yes, I think this is a clear letter of the law versus spirit of the law. Letter of the law, the Cubs didn't do anything wrong, and now they have the backing of the arbitrator. But I think we all kind of go, it's still crappy. Because clearly he was a major league player, and those 2 weeks didn't change anything. Gordon Whitmire is going to join me at 12:40. Brad Evans is I got to back away. I didn't even tell Santiago. This guy is the loudest guy on Radio Row. So,
Definitely loud.
Santiago already knew that. Brad Evans is here with me on Radio Row. What's up, brother?
Well, what's going on, my man? I'm feeling the Miami vibe. I got the pink shirt. I got the derby hat. I got proposition for certain drugs at the bar last night. I mean, I'm fully indoctrinated into the South Beach culture right now. True story, Lawrence. True story.
I'm not surprised because those stories are rampant in South Florida.
Yep.
Every now and again, you meet someone that's like, hey, what do you think about this? Or maybe you'd like this. And if this is not your thing, how about that? This,
yeah, exactly. It's I felt like a Scarface moment, kind of. It was proudful in a way.
Good. Well, I think the hat was what sold it.
Oh, 100%.
100%. Because you were down here just doing it.
Well, look, I have no agenda at all. I'm just down here trying to find work, A, B, talking to fine folks like yourself,
oh, well,
and C, just partying my tail off. That's all I'm doing.
It's ideal for you. Like, you are a staple on Radio Row, and you should be. Because you're the type of character on Radio Row that people could be like, man, I met that Brad Evans guy. He's out of his mind.
Yes. But you know what? I've gotten several people have approached me about that specifically. And, you know, I take great pride in being the loudest jackass in the room. So, you know, somebody's got to play that role, Lawrence. Why not me?
Why not you? I'm glad that you are here. Before we get into the football,
yeah,
how excited are you about your Illini?
Oh, they're a tremendous team right now. Kofi Byrne is such a unique specimen. 7 feet, 290 pounds, and a guy that grew up playing soccer, so he's got quick feet. Ultra athletic. He's got some, you know, banana hands, some buttery fingers at times. The ball slips through. But the touch for a guy that's only been playing organized basketball for 4 years is stunning. I mean, it is stratospheric, his upside at the next level. I think Illinois is going to get 2 years out of him. Io DeSumo has been one of the best closers in college basketball alongside of Miles Powell at Seton Hall or Peyton Pritchard at Oregon. It is a great collective. And this is, I'm just so happy for Brad Underwood. Because Brad Underwood is one of the true good dudes in the college basketball coaching world. And Illinois fans, you know, that grew up, I'm 41 years old. I remember that 05 team very fondly. And I think it set an unfair perspective for future coaches. You know, John Gross went through that ringer, didn't have that success. Underwood, it's taken a while.
He's had to change what he does. I remember talking to him when he first got the job. And he was talking about how, yeah, we want to take shots in the first 7 seconds of the shot clock.
Yeah, correct.
But you can't do that if you don't have great shooters. And I give him a lot of props.
Yep.
Because it takes a lot to shift away from what your fundamental thoughts are on basketball. And he's put together an offense with these guys that fit them really well.
Yeah, so what they've done is they abandoned the press, which is a staple of Huggins ball, Bobby ball. And, you know, that was the basis of what Underwood was running. So they've gone to more of a loose pack line defense as a result. So they're getting back quicker in transition, setting the defense. It is suffocating to the opposition. And I've said this before, and I'm saying this as objectively as I can as a diehard Illinois fan. If Trent Frazier continues to shoot the way he has from distance, Illinois is virtually unstoppable. They can beat anyone in the country.
Okay, so I got a few minutes with you here. What bets on the Super Bowl are interesting to you?
Let's start with the national anthem and Demi Lovato. Now, I've done some deep research on this, Lawrence. So the over-under of most books is set at 2 minutes flat, right? So covers.com did a whole bunch of research. They went back, like, the last 27 Super Bowls. The average national anthem length is a minute and 55 seconds. Now, Demi Lovato has sang the national anthem at major sporting events three times in her career. She's gone over once. And the last time she sang was at the Mayweather-McGregor fight, and it was 2:11. The other time, she was way under. So the one thing I need to know, and I got to do some snooping around, some sniffing, try to get some inside information. Will she
have...
Be
careful when you say that.
Will she have...
Considering what happened to you last night.
Say hello to my little friend. So my biggest question is, will she have musical accompaniment? Because once that first note hits... The clock starts.
So if she has, like, Alicia Keys playing piano or
something. Or a violinist or something. But she's always done an a cappella. But it's the Super Bowl. She wants to nail, you know, the last frame of the national anthem. You're going to extend that note. I'm taking the over. Taking the over, Lawrence.
Okay, what else is out there that's interesting?
I like the player props. Patrick Mahomes rush yards. Most books at 29.5.
Ooh, I did a whole... Loho Daily podcast on how he's been running more since week 8.
Yep.
I would be tempted to take the over.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've talked to some sharp bettors, and they're on the other side. But I think the sharps are getting this wrong because the one thing about San Francisco, they got an aggressive front four. If you over-pursue, then what was Mahomes great at? He's being an impromptu runner, an opportunistic runner. He's gone for 53 yards in consecutive games on the ground. That is the biggest X factor for me in this game, is the escapability and ability overall of Patrick Mahomes to chew up real estate with his legs. I'm way over as well. I think it's going to be another 40 to 50 rushing yards.
Okay. Anything else?
Raheem Mostert, pride of Purdue, 77.5 rush yards is the total there. What direction would you go on that?
And they run the ball, but we also need to know if Tevin Coleman is ready to play.
Expected to play.
I would go under.
Now, see, I'm the eternal optimist. I grew up a Chicago Cubs fan. So I would I'm taking the over. Because the vulnerability of Kansas City is defending the run. Now, they much improved over the last 5-6 games this season. But on the year, including the postseason, they're giving up 4.7 yards per carry to the running back position. Mostert is one of those guys who is an analytics darling. You know, not only is he lightning fast, but he's got great yak ability. His yards after contact per attempt on the year, including the playoffs, is 3.71, which is top 5 among all NFL running backs. You look at the guy, you know, he's a track star, right? And a pro surfer, at least he was offered a contract at one point. But he's really good within that one cut-and-go scheme that Shanahan runs. And again, given the weakness of Kansas City, I think this is going to be a hotly contested game. Got all those bullies up front of San Francisco. That offensive line is tremendous. I'm taking the over. I think he hits 100.
So what are you going to do between now and Sunday?
Well,
are you going to be here the whole time?
Dude, I would be in a coffin back to my home in Denver if I were here the entire time. I'm leaving tomorrow night.
Good idea. So am I.
So in the meantime, I'm going to go to Mike Silver and Krista Thompson's party tonight. They're old colleagues of mine at Yahoo Sports. Got to tear it up. Got to stay away from the skiing. You know, I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to get some vitamin D as well because we're in South Beach. And hopefully... No more earthquakes. I don't know if you heard about this last night. They were evacuating people from skyscrapers due to aftershocks.
Yeah, my wife texted me, and she said, are you okay? And I said, what are you talking about? She's like, there was an earthquake in Miami. I was like, that doesn't happen in Miami. That's not a thing. They get hurricanes here. They get flooding here. They don't get earthquakes. And then I went and checked, and there was a 7.7.
In Jamaica.
In Jamaica, which is not far off, and people in Miami felt it.
Crazy. I didn't feel anything. I was here.
It's pretty crazy.
I mean, a lot of things moved for me last night, Lawrence, but not the ground beneath me.
And with that, we will end our conversation with Brad Evans. You, sir, are the best.
I love you,
I
man.
I appreciate you. It's great to see you. You were a sight for sore eyes when I was like, oh, now it's Super Bowl week. Brad Evans is in the house. So I'm good now. Stay out of trouble in
I will
the next
try.
36 hours, please. But if you do, I have bail money.
Dude, high odds of incarceration for Brad Evans. High odds.
It's very, very true. That is Brad Evans, our friend, and Illini expert. I'm going to put that on your business card. By the way, a little piece of news about the Bears. We might, Herbie, we might have to get Brock's back on next week because the Bears signed Trey Roberson, who was the quarterback at ISU, and now he plays cornerback in the CFL, and they just signed him. He was like the top CFL free agent, and the Bears signed him. So it's good news.
Hey, the Cameron Meredith kind of line. Remember, he was a quarterback at ISU.
That's Brock's back knows how to put it together down there in Bloomington Abnormal. All right, we need to take a break. When we come back, the Chris Bryant ruling is in from the arbitrator. We're going to talk with the guy who's been covering this for 5 years. Gordon Wittenmeyer joins us next here on The Score. So there's been a ruling. Chris Bryant does not become a free agent after this season. Theoretically, that makes him easier to trade, or does it? I'm Lawrence Holmes. I'm at Radio Row down in Miami. But the story of the day in Chicago is about Chris Bryant and when he is going to be a free agent. What happens next? The guy who's been on top of that story covers the Cubs for the Chicago Sun-Times. He is Gordon Wittenmeyer. You can check him out now with me here on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. Hey, Gordon.
Hey, Lawrence. How are you?
I'm doing really well. What does this ruling from the arbiter or arbitrator mean for Chris Bryant and the Cubs?
Well, the shortest answer is it adds some clarity to any trade scenarios, just because now we know for sure. Even if the entire industry expected this as a result, everybody now knows for certain that there's 2 years left of club control there as they continue their efforts to see what they can get back in a trade for him.
So does this make him more tradable?
Well, I guess in theory, but from the beginning, people around the game and people within the Cubs kind of downplayed just how significant the pending nature of this ruling was as they talked trades. I mean, the idea was that in the completely shocking instance that he might win the grievance, even if you had a trade worked out, you could build a contingency into it, or you could say in this case this trade, in that case that trade, but of course, nobody expected it to take this long. I mean, here we are at the end of January when the hearing was held in October. So as we got past the winter meetings and then past the first of the year, it started to take on by degrees a little more significance just because. Well, what does it mean that a decision hasn't come down yet? So plus teams were sewing up the last spots on their rosters and kind of finalizing their plans for spring training. So, you know, in theory, you know, there might be less desire for some teams to get fully involved in blockbuster trade type talks. So it's significant in that regard. But we knew. He's been in trade rumors all along. We knew that it was going to be a difficult type of a trade to make because you need to get players back, and you're moving a guy to move salary off the payroll. So teams are going to pay almost a free agent price for him for the 2 years they're going to get him, and they're also going to expect it to give up prospects. So that was going to be a difficult trade to pull off anyway.
We talked a little bit about this back in December, but for the Cub fan that's in the car right now, I'd love to know from your perspective, how has Chris Bryant, the businessman, changed between that moment when he's not called up versus who he is right now?
Yeah, well, that's a great question because one of my lasting memories in the number of years that I've been around Chris Bryant covered him was the day that he got sent down. It might have been the next day. I think it was the first day that he reported to minor league camp and played in a game on the other side of the complex. And it might have been later the same day. But anyway, a couple of us reporters waited him out after he got done in that game. And talked to him a little bit on his way back to the clubhouse. And it was the only time, it was the first time and really the only time since that I've seen him visibly upset, visibly angry. At first, he was going to refuse to talk to us, and that's not like him at all. It's never been like him. And then he said he'd give us a couple minutes, and you know, he wasn't happy about it. They had told him going into camp, and he understood the service time rules, but they told him going into camp, yes, you have a legitimate chance to earn a spot on this roster. And then he earned it. He had the best big league camp of any offensive player in either Florida or Arizona. And they sent him out anyway, and we know why. They called him up one day after it secured their extra year of club control. And so clearly he was upset. But he also is a really smart guy. I mean, this is a guy that got straight A's in high school and was a Rhodes Scholar candidate at one point. He understands the business of baseball better than most, especially those his age, and he learned fast. And I think from that point on, it was a business to him, and he kind of stuck that in his back pocket and went about his business.
Is it impossible that there could be an extension for Bryant or that he re-signs with the Cubs?
I think it's next to impossible. Anything's possible, but they haven't even bothered to broach that subject during this offseason. They kind of knew where it was going to go when they did broach it a few years ago. And they put their efforts into guys more likely to sign closer to market value, maybe a little under market value to get security. And he's certainly not going to do that. And I think, any kind of, I'm going to stick it to them because they stuck it to me kind of sentiment. I think it's just because, it's a business. They showed me that, and I'm certainly going to treat it that way. And if you've seen even his pre-arbitration and arbitration negotiations since then, you've kind of seen his last year before arbitration by, I think, $50,000 maybe. They negotiated a deal, and really the club didn't have to do it, but they made him the highest paid guy at that service time level in history at that point, a little over $1 million. And then he became, I think, the first year arbitration guy, I think he got a record by $100,000 or something like that. And until he got hurt, he was setting these little benchmarks along the way. Again, part of that's the business of the game, right? And he's a union representative for the players in the Cubs clubhouse. He understands the value of doing those kinds of things when you're one of those players who can. And I think under all those circumstances, for him to sign anything less than what's viewed as a market deal as an extension is probably just a non-starter.
If you were a betting man, would you bet that he's traded before this season starts or at the trade deadline?
I have thought for quite a while now that it would be at the trade deadline. I still think that I still lean that way, but it's possible. I could see a scenario now with this certainty and just enough time before spring training that something could happen between now and the opener. I don't think anything's going to happen before spring training starts. I think he'll be there for that, but I could see something before the opener.
How should the average Cub fan look at this? On the one hand, there is the business aspect of it. The luxury tax issue is a big deal for the people at Addison and Clark. So you get it. You want to get under that threshold. You understand the business of it. On the other hand, you have a great player who won a World Series, and isn't that what you're trying to build? Aren't you trying to hang on to players like that for as long as they're going to be good to great players?
Yeah, I think we may have talked about this. I know I've written around this subject. The luxury tax is a real thing. It's also arbitrary. It's artificially low. There's nothing that ties it to the revenues in the game, which are at record levels, and they've risen at record margins in recent years, while the luxury tax level has just sort of crept up at some arbitrary rate. Now, that's on the players' union. They negotiated that and signed off on it without getting any assurances that it was going to be tied to revenues. So that's their fault. But what's the fault of some of the teams? A team that's doing, for instance, what the Cubs are doing, using that as some kind of a indicator for where they're going to set payroll budgets, that's on the team. That's on the ownership. And if you have a group together, I mean, the Cubs won the championship in Chicago.
Did we lose you there, Gordon? I think we just lost Gordon. All right, well, that's okay. We got a lot of good stuff out of him. And let me just say, I'm glad that Gordon was on the show. And I put together a podcast with Gordon and Steve Greenberger of the Sun-Times. And in their podcast, so here's, you know how I do House of L? I got House of L, and I decided that I would produce some episodes for friends of mine who wanted to try out podcasting. And Gordon is one of those people. So Gordon and Steve got together. We put them in a room together. They did the latest episode of House of L with their podcast, which they are calling A Podcast to Be Named Later. It's really good, and it's out right now. So if you just search wherever you get your podcast from, if you search House of L, you'll find it. You'll find all of the other people. And he's back? Gordon, I was just talking about your podcast to be named later.
If anybody's got any good names for it, send them our way, please.
But if you have not listened to it, you should. It is a pilot underneath the House of L umbrella for now, until Gordon figures out all the technical stuff that he wants to do to put him and Greenberg out there as much as they can be. I really enjoyed you guys doing it, and I'm happy that you two are moving in this direction.
Well, I really appreciate it. All your help has been amazing, because I don't know if we could have pulled any of this off without your expertise. And I mean, just giving us the platform. That's terrific. Thanks to you.
No. You guys are helping me out. You gave me content for this week that I'd be at the Super Bowl, and people are listening. And a bunch of people have already checked it out, man. I mean, you're closing in on, we put this thing out a little over 24 hours ago, and 1,500 people have listened to it. So that's good.
Wow. I hope that's good.
No, that's real good. That's real good, for sure. So thanks for shedding some light on the Bryant situation, and thanks for the podcast.
All right, man. Thank you.
That's Gordon Widenmeyer of the Chicago Sun-Times. He covers the Cubs for them. He is under the House of L umbrella this week. He and Steve Greenberg did an episode of their podcast, the podcast to be named later, and it's really, really good. While that was going on, Herbie, there was a kerfuffle here at Radio Row, because Jorge Masvidal was in the house, and I didn't see who he was beefing with, but he was beefing with somebody, and I think it was another UFC fighter, and that almost happened. Like, it almost went down right here at Radio Row. Now, the question you have to ask yourself is, did it really almost happen? Was it a real thing, or was it a work? Because if you were thinking about getting maximum exposure for one of your more popular fighters.
Salute.
Yes. You would think, I have every radio station and a bunch of TV stations in the country right here. What if they saw some sort of skirmish between Jorge Masvidal and then they're putting, I took a picture while I was talking with Gordon. Multitasking. I think that's pretty smart promotion. I mean, this is Jorge's city.
I mean, you're literally talking about it right now.
I know.
It's a work.
It was literally right behind me, too, which was a little scary. I'm like, what's happening? Like, everyone's getting up, and no thanks to the NBC Sports Chicago crew. They weren't going to step to my defense at all. Not going to take a shot from Jorge Masvidal? No? All right. Thanks a lot, jerks.
I mean, when you lose to Scotty Chagnon, you mean it's tough.
Yeah. And Draki would have done it. Scotty Chags would have done it. They do have that marquee money. Well, Chris Myers is here somewhere running around. All right, we need to take a break. There's a serious subject from yesterday that I want to get into that we'll do coming up next, and Shannon Sharp is scheduled to join us at 1:15. I'm Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.